Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to This Week in Mormons. We are happy to bring you the last episode of 2011. So here we are. Crazy.
Where are you? I am so sorry.
Are you going to make a New Year's resolution to no longer sing I Miss You by Blink-182?
Nope. I don't think so. I don't think that's going to be a thing.
Suit yourself. So, first off, hope everybody had a nice Christmas. We're here a couple days afterwards. You've all decompressed. How was your Christmas, Al?
Christmas was great. A very, very nice Christmas. And I know often I'm reluctant to love Christmas, but I did. And it was great.
Whoa.
No, it was, I got home, I got to hang out with family. It's the first Christmas where I've been home with kids. And so we had like my nieces and nephews up here. And we did the go to bed. We played Santa and put all the presents out stuff. And it was a good time.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. And the kicker for me, like, I was like, they still believe in Santa, right? And so it's this great
Santa.
Time to be an uncle, making dreams come true and all that jazz. So, some fun stuff.
I am not an uncle, so.
Why not? Tell your sister to hurry up.
Okay. Or my brother. I mean.
Oh, please. Who are we kidding?
You are so devilishly mean. No, it'll... Yeah. Well, okay. I'm glad it was good. Are you guys big gift givers in your family? Is it a thing, or is it just kind of...
Well, like, there's like a million nieces and nephews and stuff, and so it's got to the point now where it's just, we all pick a name, and it's a single gift. I'm so used to giving, like, these good novelty-type gifts to my parents. I failed this year and just got them, like, a functional patio heater thing. It was all right. I mean, it wasn't. I found this great big, like 14-foot camping chair that folds up. It was a monster. It was going to be amazing, but they were sold out, so I couldn't get that. It's a sad day for the Aldone troop, but what can you do?
Yeah, life is hard sometimes.
What about you? How was your Christmas, Jeff?
It was pleasant enough. It's been great to be back in California. It's where I am right now. I go back to DC on Thursday.
How was your Del Taco Christmas?
So good. So good. Though I did not go to Del Taco itself. No, not on Christmas Day. No, I had pot roast and delicious things with my extended family. It was wonderful.
Yes, did they ask you to sing and did you hide like a wiener?
That's usually a Thanksgiving occurrence, but thankfully, no singing. So it was fun with the whole extended family, and some of them were out of town, but I saw them earlier last week before they left. But we had a couple of my wee cousins there, and it was playing with them, having a good time, all that jazz. We go to my dad's on Christmas Eve, typically. My parents are divorced, and so every Christmas Eve we have dinner with my dad, and that was all nice and fun, good memories. It's been a hard year for my dad, so nice to spend time with him.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So. Get home, give the old man some love.
So, So it was all fine. Day of was nothing fancy. I got some books and guitar pedal that I'm very.
Oh wow! Did you find new love for the holiday? As just like in the movie The Holiday, did the Santa Ana winds blow to
no.
you?
No. Never. No. I love Christmas. You don't have to.
Did you meet an English woman and say, you look like my Bobby?
And then I channeled my inner Jack Black. Get crazy.
You don't like tents. And then use the line, I'm a weeper. I'm a real weeper.
See, now you're crossing into territory where I do not know what you are talking about.
These are all quotes from The Holiday. Have you not had to watch that movie with a woman this...
No, and it tells you how hard up I must be for true love, because I have not watched The Holiday with anyone, no.
Unacceptable.
I'm sorry.
Unbelievable.
I don't need The Holiday to get women, okay? I don't need it.
Wait, Really?
No, I get them without the holiday.
So it is. Well done, Jeff. You are a greater man than I. Every man envies you.
It is a fine mark of my true devotion if I'm willing to see a chick flick with a lady.
Yeah, that may be true.
So, you know, so fun times. Yay. Yahoo! Christmas was great. I went to Magic Mountain on Monday, which was awesome. And that's a Six Flags theme park, for those of you not familiar with it. Al, remember how we had a great day at King's Dominion that one time in July?
I do remember.
And it was terribly hot, but at least we got to walk on everything because the weather was so terrible.
Yes, go on.
Monday was the day after Christmas, so instead it was just crowded. And I didn't go on everything I wanted to, which kind of blew. But it was still fun there with the Sibs and my mom. Special shout out to my mom for being awesome and going on roller coasters. Because a lot of moms her age who are nearing 60 would not care or bother with a roller coaster. But my mom loves them, and she's a trooper.
I love your mother.
I know you do. I know you do. I remember us telling you.
I love so much your mother.
About the things you choose to be. Remember how I was telling you last week, I think it's still funny that my greater extended family asks me how you are doing when they see me?
I am the equivalent of your life partner, Jeff. I'm all they know.
I'm like, he hasn't even lived here for 3.5 years, and you people are still caring about him? Let him go. Just let him go. No. They don't care. So, sad times all around. But hey, so Christmas break can only last for so long. We're going to face New Year's, which, for me, New Year's is anticlimactic and kind of whatever.
This year or in general?
Just in general. I don't love New Year's a ton. I think the parties are always kind of whatever. The whole event's kind of stupid because we're celebrating, like, nothing. We're celebrating the fact that the Gregorian calendar is just changing. And that's an excuse to party. Like, why don't we throw... We should throw massive parties on, like, VE Day or VJ Day or things where we actually accomplished, you know, something as opposed to just turning a page. I don't know. New Year's always winds up feeling lackluster to me, just personally, but...
Huh. That's interesting. Have you had good experiences with this New Year's holiday of which you speak?
Some have been good, some have been whatever. You know, it's run the gamut. I bet you could say
I don't know that I've ever had a great New Year's. Like, I've never had, I don't know, like, if I've ever had... I always enjoy myself, and we'll play board games and things as a family, or if I'm out with my single self, then I will go to the Mormon dances and dance. And of course, because it's a Mormon dance, very little kisses happen at midnight. That never occurs.
Lame. In
a big awkward steak dance. You know what I mean? It's one of those where you're like, all right, this is okay. I drank some Martinelli's and pretended like it was champagne. Ha ha ha!
Yeah, I don't do the dances. The only good time I had at a dance was the time my friends and I went to a, quote, mid-singles one, which meant 25 and up, and we were the only ones that age, of our age. And so I spent the whole night dancing with, you know, 50-year-old women and stuff. It was awesome. That was a great evening because it went down as this just brilliant memory for all of us there that I'm sitting there slow dancing with, like, hot soccer moms or ex-soccer moms and...
Wait, were they hot soccer moms?
It's funny. See, first off, if I'm ever a bishop, and I give this to any person in a position of leadership, if you are dealing with a couple who is struggling and thinking about divorce, and their differences really are, actually should be reconcilable, we're not dealing with really like heavyweight, yeah, get the heck out of their stuff, send them to a mid-singles dance or a singles dance for their age demographic. Send these men and women to see what other people their age who are single are like, and you will do everything you can to save that marriage. It's got to be one of the most depressing things on earth to face that. Because you've got the guys are trying to sort of reinvent themselves or whatever, so they're hoping they can score, you know, hot 30-year-olds when they're 45 or 50 or something like that. And so then the women who are 50 stand less of a chance. The ones who are a bit younger go the extra mile to do themselves up and, like, become sex bombs. It's really awkward. Like, I saw more immodesty and non-wearing of garments or whatever. You know, it's their business if they're endowed or not. I saw more of that at this dance than I would at, say, just a plain old YSA dance of people our age.
The cleavage was out and about, yes?
Yeah, like if these women have been through the temple, the New Year's dance is a reason to not wear one's garments because you got to flaunt what you got because you've got this one night to find what you need. And being a sweet spirit's apparently not going to cut it. You need to have the goods or something like that, so... It was a hilarious night. Oh, I was it was a funny one of the funniest experiences of my life. I loved it.
You laugh afterwards. In the moment, it's always terribly awkward, though.
Well, it was kind of awesome. Me and my guy friends. I mean, we were sitting there. We'd find women who we thought, you know, clearly older than us, but decent looking, and we were like trying to egg each other on, like immature, shallow guys, like go ask these women out, go flirt with so-and-so, see what you can pull off, da-da-da-da-da. I thought it was amusing, personally.
Well, you are a braver man than I. See, in those moments, I'm like, why am I dancing with someone my mother's age? This feels wrong. I wish I was not here. But you can't, like, you can't just turn around and leave at that moment because you are doing them a favor somehow by being a gentleman and sticking around? I don't know.
You're doing them a favor? I honestly wonder...
I don't know.
And this isn't California pride, but I do wonder if, given where I grew up, since there is more of an emphasis on looks and on potential surgeries and augmentations of sorts, I wonder if it's a little more prevalent to see the women who might be that age having done things that are unnatural to be more attractive, you know, because I felt like it was a bit different on my end.
What?
I don't know. Well, no, it's like, what I'm saying. Look, all I'm saying is if you're going to some dance, if you're going to go to a similar dance and you're out in the Midwest, I wouldn't expect to see a bunch of done-up women who have Botoxed and boob-jobbed and done whoever and lipo and who knows what else, right? There's not the societal pressure as much in some places like that. Whereas somewhere like Southern California, for better or really for worse, there is more of that. There is more of that pressure.
That's true.
That's what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is I danced with some hot mamas. It was great.
There you go. So did you take the time to do a year in review this year, Jeff? Do you do that? Is that an annual thing for you?
It sort of is, and I realize I should probably write a blog post reviewing my year. One of the things I'm the most proud of, actually, is I made a New Year's resolution to keep a journal again and be good about it.
Yeah.
Which I'm normally terrible about. I write a little bit for a week and I disappear, and like a year later I come back and write something. I'm really pleased that I've been consistent this entire year in journaling, and so I need to actually flip through my journal and, you know,
How do you do it? Like, are you an everyday journal writer?
I try really hard for every day, but I often find myself catching up like every couple of days.
Yeah,
typically.
See, I'd never missed a day for 17 years until I broke my arm. And then I was 4 months without, and now I've gone a year, the first year of my life, without writing in a journal every day.
Well, see, you should recommit, because honestly, I mean, I'm not just saying this. Like, when I think about people who write in journals, I remember I've known this about you as a journal writer, and I'd sit there to myself and think, like, Al is great about doing this journal thing all the time, every day. I always see him in his room writing in his journal, whether it's this or with scripture study or anything like that. And that's something I realized. That's something I could strive to achieve in one way or another. So for me, it's been really good.
What's interesting is when I'm writing in my journal, reading my scriptures is easier because I have that like daily habit moment where I'm like, oh, I got to do this. And if you give yourself a little, you know, a couple of things and block out time, you can do all of them because you remember. Like, I've noticed it's harder now, like without the journal writing, for me to get my scripture study in because I don't even have a moment where I'm like, oh, I should reflect on my day. I should, you know, like, let's review and work on things. Never happens. And so I can go a week without reading my scriptures or, you know, doing any of that and not even realize it because I don't break up the monotony of work and sleep.
So, yeah, and you got to break it up. And, you know, see, I'm trying to make mine of better quality, because I don't want my journal to read so much like a travel log, which oftentimes it does. You know, I find the best entries are when I'm really being reflective and expressing thoughts rather than just giving an account of the day's activities. So I'm working on that still to try to make it more worthwhile.
Oh, that's good. You are an example to me. So
as far as a year in review, I'm going to have to assess. It's been a great year for me, so.
I had kind of a bum moment where I was like, I really just kind of floated this year. I haven't done squat. And so I sat down and wrote one and eked out. You know, I had some good highlights of the year. I had some cool stuff that I ended up doing. And enough to feel better about myself. And so I blogged it up. I'll put a link out there. But the church also did a year in review. That was my sleek segue into it.
That was very slick.
They just did, I don't know, I haven't noticed that they do this typically, but I like that they're doing it. A couple of the highlights, I'll just throw them out there. Temple building was a highlight. They had quite a few new temples done. Seven temples, they broke the ground for seven of them, and then they dedicated, what was it, four temples, I think, and then rededicated the Atlanta, Georgia temple, and yeah, it was a good year for that. We had the Mormon moment as a highlight of the year for the church, where, you know, just what the media had dubbed the Mormon moment with the increased media attention, humanitarian aid. The church had a couple of earthquakes and tsunamis they responded to and did so in their just outstanding fashion in places like Australia, New Zealand, Colombia, Brazil, and the Philippines. And then Mormon Helping Hands, which I don't pay much attention to this, but apparently this is a big deal for the church. Yeah. In places like Canada and Britain and the U.S. I've never even been invited to work in, like, I've never even seen this going around, so apparently I'm missing out. 150 million copies of the Book of Mormon hit. The 150 millionth copy of the Book of Mormon rolled out this year.
That's actually a pretty big milestone. That's cool.
The other headline is "You Choose to Change When You Follow Christ," which I'm not sure. I think Thomas S. Monson just gave that quote, and so that's a milestone for the church? Question mark. Religious freedom. With Elder Oaks talking about it at the University Law School. Their commencement speech thing, and then a couple other things around religious freedom that happened this year, including Quentin L. Cook participating in BYU Idaho's commencement speech, and just a couple of op-eds that were out around it. 9/11 reflections, Mormon Tabernacle Choir tour, and the movie set created to tell the story of Christ's life, diversity and strength of women, the I'm a Mormon campaign, church history sites, including the decision to restore the Pennsylvania historic site, and then thousands enjoy the annual Christmas concert was also a highlight.
A lot of good stuff.
So that was the church's year in review?
One thing I want to remember is the reflections on 9/11 by President Monson. That was a big deal because President Monson got carried in the Washington Post, that whole article he wrote, which was a pretty... I can't remember another time when one of the leaders of the church wrote an op-ed for something like that. So I remember that being pretty neat.
Yeah.
Excited me.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any, like, for us, I would definitely say Kevin Beckstrom.
Yeah, let's think about the TWIM year interview. Kevin Beckstrom sending us a cease and desist.
He was a big one for sure.
Pretty much the best thing of the year. Let's think, what else do we have? We had, of course, Rick Buck was on as the Mormon Bachelor.
Yeah, we had the Mormon Bachelor rise and fall.
And then we had the fall, and we got to do those wonderful Mobatch theaters with Jenna Kim Jones. And I think just bringing Jenna Kim Jones into our TWIM family, for me, was a highlight.
We had a year of guests. We had our first guests, really, this year, right?
Sort of. I think we had some of the... No, because we had Mobatch at the end of last year, and we had
I guess we had Torlando in the early days.
We had Jana McPherson on for the FHE book.
That's right.
But we've had more this year, even. So
we had Jenna, then we had the most interesting Mormon in the world guys, and then we had Mom, I'm Dating a Mormon fellows, ladies.
And we've covered some serious stuff, and for me, from a personal, well, from the Twim standpoint, I've loved getting more mail from our fans, and some people have sent us some really thoughtful letters. And
dude, that's been a shock.
Because we do a stupid show. And when people send us these thoughtful things, I'm blown away that we actually are we having like some sort of a positive effect on somebody's life? It blows my mind.
Which I mean, yeah, like it's pretty amazing to know that people actually take time out of their week to listen to what we have to say and what we're jabbering about.
Yeah.
Any other great moments that stand out to you from this last year?
One that does stick out to me, and it's worth mentioning because we might as well mention it. When we started and then failed sort of with our Sunday School Bonanza podcast that we did kind of in the middle of the year, the Gospel Doctrine Prep, I thought that was a cool adventure that we went off on to do that. It just got hard to keep up during the fall. But I guess the venue, though. We are going to bring it back in sort of a different format, but hopefully starting this Sunday, we will have that secondary podcast up for the entire year, the Book of Mormon. Al will not necessarily be hosting it.
I'll be
along with
out.
Me. He'll do some episodes. It's going to be me probably with a rotating panel of co-hosts to do those. But look for that. We'll send you another reminder. Other than that, it's been a good year and we've seen our listener, our numbers have grown steadily through the year. So that's also nice to see.
Amen.
And then next week we can say all of this again because next week will be our 100th episode. So the same things for which we are congratulating ourselves now.
We like to feel good about us.
We really do. We get really insecure when we don't get comments or emails or anything like that. It's sad.
Yes.
Okay, so last week everyone probably saw this because you couldn't really avoid it. So P. Diddy quoted L. Tom Perry on his Twitter feed. There's not a lot to analyze here. But it's hilarious that P. Diddy quoted, quote, "One of the greatest weaknesses in most of us is our lack of faith in ourselves." L. Tom.
This had to have been retweeted like a million times.
And that's from L. Tom Perry. And everyone's just, now I don't know how much P. Diddy knows because he's a smart fella. But of course, part of me is thinking there's no way he knows who L. Tom Perry actually is or what L. Tom Perry's significance is for a particular community. It just sounds like a good quote, you know. I just think it's a riot that P. Diddy quoted this. So everyone's just like, worlds collide.
Oh, he's in
this
love.
Is the culmination of the Mormon moment. P. Diddy is now quoting L. Tom Perry. What is next? We find out that fake CNN story from years ago about Snoop Dogg joining the church will actually come to pass, perhaps?
How great would that
be? I mean, for all we know, I can't even name rappers. I'm trying to think. Every rapper I want to name is like from high school, like P. Diddy and Nas. And,
you're like
and the guy
Rhymes.
Who sang Back That Thing Up. All these things of 10...
Sir Mix-a-Lot will tweet.
Of 10 years ago that I can't remember. So please put in whichever hip-hop artist works for you.
Insert here.
So my heart and love goes to P. Diddy for what he just did.
As does mine.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know. So, yeah, good times with the old P, with the P. David Archuleta. Wait, didn't we talk about this last week?
No, we didn't. No.
We sort of did. He announced that he's going on his mission. Everybody's very excited. Why not be excited for the old David? He got written up in Rolling Stone,
CNN,
USA Today, CNN, Us Weekly. Like, everybody's pretty much written about this because they're kind of shocked. And the response, as far as I can tell, is overwhelmingly supportive,
I agree.
First. Secondly, a lot of people are saying, you know, kind of a stupid move to put your music career on hold, but like, what a respectable guy. Like, they can't say enough good about him as a person, right? His character and the fact that he's doing this. Which, I was having a conversation with a girl on the way to go play hockey last week. And she was telling me how much she loved David Archuleta and how when she went to that Motab David concert, it was the best thing ever. And I was like, seriously, that guy is kind of lame. And she said, no, I love
no,
him.
So lame.
And I was like, how come he didn't go on a mission? And she said, well, because he has a greater calling in music and blah blah blah. And I called BS, and then it came back, and that very next day he's like, I'm going on a mission. So I ate crow. I Way to go, David. Good on you. But, I mean, already, like, some pretty amazing publicity. Just the act of going seems to be, you know, having quite an effect. And the comments are mostly, like, awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Way to go. Good. Good for you.
No, I agree. It's funny. No. It's one more thing to sort of add to the whole Mormon mainstream stuff that's been going on all year. You know, I mean, we've got political things in the musical, and we even have known artists like David Archuleta very publicly saying they're going to drop their career for 2 years and go and do something different, which is just fascinating to me. I love the video. I think we put it on the Twin Facebook page last week of him in the concert last week when he paused between songs and announced he was going to serve his mission. And right when he says that, you hear this screaming of just teenage girls. They're so happy.
Oh, they loved it.
But like you said, yeah, I think it's been a positive response, and good for him. You know, with anything like this, you can expect a lot of hate to show up on boards about stupid brainwashed Mormons and whatever, you know, and I think it's great that people are being supportive that David wants to do this. And
David, our brother.
Of course,
the
one thing is, where are they going to send him? He's very much a known quantity in the U.S., so we can't have him here.
I would never recognize the guy. I couldn't recognize a single one of any of the American Idol champion people except for that Christina Aguilera. She's really done something.
She was never,
but outside
was never
of her,
on American Idol.
None of them have gone on, like, who do I know out of there?
Ruben Studdard. Come on. Big star. Lots of good things happening for him.
Who? Ruben?
Yeah. Fantasia Barrino. Dude, everyone knows her. Household name. Bo Bice? How could we ever forget Bo Bice? Come on, Al.
I have no idea.
And what about that
about
one?
Any of these people could knock on my door.
And what about that redheaded kid from 7 years ago who looked like Rick Astley? What about him? He was wonderful.
Who's the one that like has got? There's one that's like a good musician and gone on.
Okay,
to
the two. We're getting on a tangent, but the two American Idols who have done the best are Kelly Clarkson, the first winner of it ever, who has had a successful career, and also Carrie Underwood,
yeah, she's beautiful.
She's beautiful. Those two, I think, unequivocally have had the most success post-American Idol. I mean,
everyone else out of that show, I have no idea who they are.
Yeah, because the success rate for that show of really turning somebody into a bona fide star where they stand on their own two feet is pretty low. These are all people who keep busy and this and that, but like, I mean, it's the kind of thing where if you go to Atlantic City, you see that Taylor Hicks is performing in some bad off-Broadway musical or something like that. You
know? I don't even know who Taylor Hicks is.
He looks like he is 50. That's all I remember about him.
Yeah, see, I don't think old Archuleta is going
to
have
probably a problem. Probably not, but that said, I wouldn't be surprised if he were to go foreign somewhere where he's not quite as known.
I thought you said... Isn't he known more well in foreign places?
No, I don't think anybody knows who he is in, like, Kenya. I mean, come on.
Oh, that's true. They've probably got bigger problems.
Probably, yeah. So, good for you, Archie. And apparently I just missed him. He was at the New Deseret Book here in Orange County. They reopened one in OC, and he was there. I missed him by, like, 2 days.
Oh, that could have done it, man.
I could have shaken his hand and taken him under my arm and told him all about missions and what to expect, because I'm the only person who could offer him that advice.
You'd be like, hey, listen, when you go to the dining hall, go up to the front and get an ice cream bar, then go stand in line. Savvy?
Or when it's pizza night, chances are the sisters in your group will only want one slice. Make sure they get the two they're allowed so you can have that third slice. Think about
Fast
this.
Sunday, skip the line, go get a sack lunch, then go to the end of the line when it's gone.
Should we just start a whole new podcast called MTC Advice for Missionaries?
Anytime somebody's like, I'm going on a mission, you have any advice? That's all. I'm like, listen, you're going to love the people,
food.
You love all that, that's going to be great, but let me give you some ideas to get through this thing. The microwave in the basement. You never think to look there, but it is there. You can microwave your food. Also, unscrew all the light fixture things, because chances are somebody's left you a message.
Oh, what? I don't understand what you're referencing. That what?
No, huh? in the rooms, like we unscrew the little light fixture things too. There's all kinds of like messages passed down from generation to generation.
I did
generation.
Not know this. Huh.
Oh, yeah, they're like, hey. Anyway,
So-and-so
messages
was here.
For another time.
Well, that's exciting. Oh, by the way, so speaking of Deseret Book, I have a bone to pick with Sherry Dew. I don't mean to take away the...
Wait. Before we get there, when were we speaking about Deseret Book?
When? Why? What? When just a minute ago, David Archuleta was at Deseret Book. Remember, I was going to take him under my arm and give him advice, and then we started talking about the MTC. That happened like 45 seconds ago. Remember?
Oh, I see.
Remember right then?
Yeah, go on.
So, I've got a bone to pick with Sherry Dew. And Deseret Book ahead. In general. This is a very away. Personal affair for me. It's almost a rant, if you will.
I would.
But basically, 2 years ago, they closed the Deseret Book here in Orange County, California. They closed it for whatever reason, beyond me. There's the closest other Deseret Book is in San Diego, so whatever. So
no,
they shut it down. They liquidated. It all seemed very suspect to me. Now, the manager at the time is a good man, and of course, I'm personally invested here. I used to work at that Deseret Book after my mission when I was going to college here. And so they were letting the whole staff go, shutting it down. It seemed kind of an obvious way to get rid of a guy who'd been a store manager for 30 years and was probably one of the higher paid managers within the organization. But I always just kind of thought that might have been the case. Who knows what? However, I was worried whether they were even taking care of him in closing the store as far as any sort of a severance or anything along those lines, because he was frantically trying to network when people were coming into the store in droves to buy all the liquidated stuff. But that's all I suspected. It wasn't until this week when I was hanging out with some people closer to the source, and I found out that, yeah, Deseret Book took a guy who served 30 years as a manager of that store and gave him nothing when they closed the store. They said, hey, we're closing the store in 3 weeks, and that's it. You will have no severance, no health care. You are out of a job. That is how they treated him. Now, this makes me question a lot of things. I mean, so I blame Sherry Dew because she's in charge. It also just seems to reflect poorly, I think, on the church's values. I know Deseret Book is a for-profit entity that is...
On the church's values? Are the church's values really suspect here?
Well, yes, and this is what I'm trying... This is what I was just trying to say. Because Deseret Book is not an official church wing, but it is owned by the church, and many of its rules and things it tries to represent do follow church guidelines. I mean, for example, if it's some Deseret Books, if you come in scruffy to work, they like won't let you work and stuff like that. They almost have an honor code. So while I know it's not an official wing of the church, I feel like it's very frustrating for me on that end to feel like to see that they could treat someone so poorly. That it's supposed I know this is corporate America, that there's a bottom line, that stuff like that happens. I know this is not the only case of this ever happening. But I feel like it's especially frustrating given my experience with Deseret Book. And seeing more and more that it's the
fact that you hate
them. It's an organization that seems to care more and more about improving their margins, which is fine, but it's very much at the expense of the human element of the corporation. And I saw that when I was working there, and it's clearly only gotten worse. And so I'm very disappointed to have learned this.
We expected more out of you, Deseret.
I mean, you take a good man like that and just hang him out to dry after that much... decades of service.
He was a good boy.
And since then...
You clean your own
dang And since
sheets.
Then, he has still struggled to get anything because who finds... bookstore manager, kind of a dying industry. So where are you going to go with that?
What did you want? What did you want him to do for him? Give him a reference to another bookstore?
No.
The man clearly needs to reinvent himself. It's his own fault for trusting a company for 30 years.
And some of that, what you're saying is...
7 to 10 years, then rebrand... Get out of there. Go find something new. That's
and in that sense,
say.
It's true. But don't you also feel that when an individual gives that much years and years, decades of their life to a company,
don't you think Sherry Dew shed tears with him? She probably broke bread with him and said, Horace, what can we do for you? And he said, Sherry, you do what you do. And she said, so it is. It is what it is. I'm sure cliches were exchanged. It is what it is. When in Rome, you must do as the Romans do. And off they went.
Yeah. Or she could have at least given him like 2 months of severance or something as a nice gesture. Hey, thanks for all your hard work.
Which if he's a bookstore manager would have been all of like $1,000. So why not?
Maybe
right?
So, but why not? I'm just saying it's just bad. It seems so mean to me. So mean to me. It makes me want to not shop at Deseret Book. But I just did.
But I just did
for Christmas. So,
oh,
I
just shop from Amazon.
Yeah, but half the time Amazon stuff you buy that's made by Deseret Book isn't any more discounted. It's like the same price as you'd get at a Deseret Book. There's no point.
Those fatherless children.
So shame on you, Sherry Dew.
Shame indeed. Big week for the Jimmer. basketball started. The NBA is back in season. The players have finally agreed to their millions and millions, and we can get on with life. So that was exciting. But Jimmer Fredette had his first two games with the Kings, and he started both games, so he's in the starting lineup. An ESPN commentator, Rick something or other. Let me get his name because I care about him. Rick Riley said that Jimmer didn't. He wasn't ever going to have a shot in the NBA, right? He was too slow off the dribble. He wasn't going to be able to get any shots off. It wasn't going to happen. And so he bet $5,000 in like a mocking. I'd give $5,000 to you know somebody if Jimmer Fredette ever started a game in his rookie year in the NBA. Well, Jimmer did, so he wrote him a check to his favorite charity, which conveniently enough is like Jimmer Fredette's family charity. I can give you the actual name, which is like Jimmer's family and friends. Hold on. Let me pull this.
It's called the Fiduciary Fredettes.
No. Gosh, I can't find the name of his charity. I'm serious. It's something like that, though. It's like Jimmer's
family.
The
point is that the money is good. The money is going so his family can buy a new flat screen TV. Got it.
Oh, made out to the Fredette Family Foundation, which helps families, supposedly. Yeah, of course. Make it out to the Al's Family Foundation. And I promise it's going to a good cause, lady. So he writes a check to him and eats crow and says, well done, Jimmer. You are legit. And Jimmer's done good. He did 22 points in his first game, or 21 points in his first game. Just played again. He's playing right now this evening. I'm missing it to be here.
I'm sorry. If we finish, we can be soon. You can go do it.
But here's the good thing about Jimmer, right? Like, we've given him our fair amount of criticism. We haven't been on the bandwagon the whole time.
Except for the Jimmergasm. He's has a good moment.
He's like, as opposed to a guy like Sean Bradley, who is notorious for being a dirty player and is foul mouth in the NBA. Who was supposedly a good Mormon role model guy growing up. Like, I read his book as a kid, for crying out loud. I read the Sean Bradley book. And, was pretty disappointed in the guy so far as a player goes and as a person goes. But then, you know, Jimmer's like, he's a quality guy. Everybody
stand-up fellow.
Knows him, says that he's very nice. Very nice fellow. He's marrying his sweetheart and yada, yada, yada. But I mean, he's a good image for the church, and people know the church, a lot of it, because of Jimmer and that guy on BYU that had sex. Those two things I get the most right now.
It's been such a good year for Mormonism.
It really has.
Okay, well, fair enough. Jimmer, good job. A lot of eating crow mentioned by you this week, Al. Just wanted to throw that out there. So, I have another question. I have a question for everyone. It's come to my attention, and Al, maybe you can tell me if this has happened in Utah or not, because it hasn't happened back east. I understand it's been maybe a couple of months now that they sort of rebranded and restructured many of the singles wards in Southern California. Maybe all of California. I'm not sure. So what we're talking about here is none of the...
The P4 is gone.
Yeah, none of the wards are known as whatever ward they were before. Now they are all sort of the stake city, you know, name or whatever, YSA. So my old ward was Placentia 4th Ward. Now it is called Placentia YSA Ward. That's the name of it. And they also combined two of the wards in Huntington Beach, which is totally lost on me because those are humongous wards. And now there's just Huntington Beach YSA. And they combined some other ones and they're just called whatever YSA. I don't know how far this reach has gone. If this is
was it big hubbub and kicking out all the 30 and
I think
oldies?
They're starting to enforce that as well, which wouldn't be a big deal in DC. They've been doing that for a while anyway. So they're
that was a huge deal in like Boulder.
Really,
like people leaving the church over.
And
there.
So I'm
and in Utah.
Well, it's funny because I was talking about this morning with both of our former bishop when you lived here in California, Al. He and I, we went out to breakfast today. And
I love
him. We were chatting about some of this stuff and sort of the pros and cons of all of this and of kicking people out, you know, if there is more value in telling them to go to a family ward and invest and work in that. But I feel like this is a bit of a tangent, but the whole point of singles wards, I think, is to keep people active, even if they're flawed. because YSA programs and wards don't work. But I get it if the
I don't believe that that is the whole point of a singles ward, Jeff.
Okay, it's not the whole point. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's the most at-risk demographic for inactivity in the church.
Right.
It's probably a wiser move to at least allow them to consort with like-minded people rather than throwing them in a family ward where, despite what should be done, the reality is people...
So would you suggest that that we should have a mid-singles ward wherever there's a singles ward?
Well, not wherever, because there are mid-singles wards where it counts. We have a mid-singles ward in my stake in Virginia, for example, and that's fine. And that's not my main point, talking about the ins and outs of that, because I think singles wards serve a purpose. But I have heard, for one, that Salt Lake is no longer taking applications for singles wards, which is interesting to me. So just no more new ones, that's an interesting gesture. The main reason none of this adds up in my mind is what happened to all that stuff earlier in the summer when we were talking about disbanding BYU wards, making them all singles wards, making more singles wards, and even breaking down bigger singles wards because the, quote, ideal number of people in a singles ward was something like 110 to 120? Remember? They talked about that, and they said they'd readjust boundaries to try to reach that equilibrium across all levels. If that's the case, why are they combining wards of 300 people, making gigantic wards that you can't even handle? I don't understand.
Here's what I would suggest.
Why is that the case?
I would suggest, as people making moves, if I had to venture and speculate here, this is what I would think they're doing. Is they're combining these because there's an abnormal number of over 30 people in there, and so they're going to combine them and kick the over 30s out. Let that settle, and then if there remains like more than what it should be able to handle, then they adjust from there. But right now they'll let it, you know, they'll just say, all right, there's, you know, on the books we should have 350 whatever singles. And the thing with the Huntington Beach ward is there's not like huge obscene amounts of people that are within those ward boundaries that go to them. That's the destination ward where people will
drive in
and they go to that ward whether they're in the boundaries
or not. Right? But they do have a lot of people actually living in the boundaries though. They really do.
But as they continue to enforce the rules, I suspect that they anticipate that the numbers are gonna level out a little bit, and that's why they would combine.
But then how about this whole notion of why are they saying, hey, no more creating new singles wards, and that goes against the whole idea of we want to create manageable singles wards of a manageable size.
No, that's just for Salt Lake. That's not a church.
But isn't
rule.
It? If it's no more, well, so there's
it
so there's
is
no,
not.
No more new singles wards in Salt Lake. But I've heard very good account, not for California. So to whom does it apply? I don't get it because this hasn't come out to the East yet, and I don't know if they're just going to leave the East Coast alone and say, do your thing. We're worried about places where the membership
is more dense. Here's what I know is that they are trying to handle or at least address the issues that are prevalent in current singles wards, which were, you know, the fact that you were never leaving. There wasn't necessarily a cutoff date. There was an understood cutoff date, but like if you were buddies with the bishop, you could stay forever, right? And so a bishop that loves you, he's never going to tell you to quit coming to church. He's just going to say, come on, let's get you married. Let's keep trying. Oh, you're 34 this year. Darn. Let's get you going. And so like that was a problem. The other problem was in actual like segregation. So I could live right next to the University of Utah. And yet, you know, even if I was of that similar age, I was in this like older singles ward versus being in the young singles ward, which is for the university itself. Like, that was a problem, the actual demographics not mixing and you know, marriages, people are marrying less and less and less in singles wards right now. So, I mean, that's something they're trying to address, as well as, like you mentioned, the activity rates. And so, all of those combined, I mean, they're making stabs and trying to figure out what to do with it. If they're doing it right, I don't think they know if they're doing it right. I'm sure that the fact that they're making moves is inspired. I don't necessarily know if these are the right moves, and I don't think that they're 100% confident these are the right moves. I think they're just trying things and trying to figure out what's going to recapture, you know, a 35-year-old single female, what's going to get her back to church, or the 32-year-old male that just gets kicked out of his singles ward, what gets him back to church.
Right, and I feel like ideally the family wards have always had a responsibility to look after YSA or just single members, but they generally fail. And I think part of this is trying to really put the foot down and tell the family wards to kind of get with it and actually
I talked to a girl in that's going to a family war, and I was like, so are you getting totally hooked up? Like, is everybody there just like, hey, I got a cousin, I got a cute brother, I got a this, I got a that, let me take care of you, like playing matchmaker? And she was like, no, nobody, because like no one's in her same situation.
Yeah, so nobody, no peers.
Like they're so, you've got four kids and you're off in La La Land. You're not thinking, oh, I need to hook up poor Tiffany. You're thinking, I've got four kids, right? Like, I'm sure she has kids. I'm sure she must be married. I'm sure she's in a different situation, right? Like the family wards don't come together to hook you up, which I would expect they would. I would have thought.
No, of course not. There's too much other stuff going on.
Or like the single mom, that everybody'd be matchmaking and playing Yentl, and it's not happening.
Okay, here's my last other issue with it. What's with the rebranding? Have they done this in Utah as well? The whole blank YSA ward is the official name. You know what I mean?
No.
And that's, I don't understand what the rationale is behind that. I feel like I get it because it labels the ward.
Was it a Winder second and a Grant fourth?
And that's fine. And even like, before, if you look in the actual records, it might have said, you know, peer side ward, then in parentheses YSA. So it designates it, at least on the records. But I feel like naming these wards as the blank, the, you know, the Irvine YSA or whatever, I feel like it's labeling the people in the ward based on what they have yet to achieve. Like reminding them, hey, what?
Hey,
guess what? You are this outlying demographic in the church.
Come on.
You are, like, because.
So the fact that you're called a singles ward somehow insults you?
No, it doesn't insult me, but I feel like one of the gripes with singles wards is often that they're a joke or it's too social and there's not enough focus on actual discipleship. And I feel like the way to do that, wouldn't it be to just treat them like everybody else? Put them together with a group of people, their own peers, so that they can socialize and feel at home and all that. That's the why we group them together in that sense. But in every other way, give them opportunities to grow and to feel like they are involved regular members of the church, not some special group that's labeled.
Have you forfeited those opportunities because you've been labeled as a YSA ward? What is this? This isn't even a real
argument. It is a real argument. Why the special name? It's not like we call the other one so-and-so family ward officially.
No, we do. We do. Have you never seen Independence 3rd Tongan?
Yeah, Tongan, because Tongan designates if it's a special language spoken, so I understand that a little bit more at least, so that you know, but...
All right, do you want to stumble into a singles ward unknowingly if you're a married man? No, you have to designate it. So either you use singles or you have some code.
But in that
name,
case, it's fine. Because
slab of loveless tuna. I still know what it means,
yes, but,
right?
But that's fine because previously if you would look on the meeting house locator, for example, it would designate. It would say Placentia 4th and then in parentheses say YSA. So if you were looking for a meeting house, you would know that one's a singles ward. I just feel like making it part of the actual title takes away any sense of like actual
Let's
identity, actually being able to stand up and say, hey, I'm part of a regular ward like everybody else. No, instead now I'm part of this
Let's
special
play a
ward.
Game called special. No one gives a darn what the name of their local branch is. Jeff, it's not about the name on the back of your jersey. It's about the name on the front, all right? It's about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, not Placentia 4th. You big...
But you're failing to see what it implies. It implies that YSAs merit some sort of unique singling out or distinction.
Is your identity somehow derived? This is a stupid
No, my identity itself is not derived from that, but I could fully understand why it just seems odd. That's all I'm saying.
Neither is your ward identity. What a stupid,
This
stupid
is not a stupid
argument.
Argument at all. This is a brilliant argument.
That's terrible.
If you
All
want,
right.
if you want,
I'm gonna talk
if you
about
want young single adults
men
to feel like they are anybody else, if you want YSA,
men were interviewed and they asked for advice on dating. They asked these
You're just
men.
Cutting me off. I'm trying to talk here. I'm talking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All I'm saying is my final thought is just like, I don't know. You made me lose my train of thought with all your talking. Thank you so much for that. You monster. How dare you?
I'm sorry. So Ron Hammond for the Deseret News gives an interview or does a little bit of research, anonymous online research, asking men about their dating experiences. This is a throwback to kind of the Mormon times days, right? Here's the advice. Men say, women, be yourself. Be talkative. Don't be afraid to be yourself. And don't make it an interview. Don't go in thinking, I will or I will not marry that person. Just go on a social dating outing. Ron Hammond has a PhD in family studies from BYU. And frankly, Ron, I feel like this brings some sort of a disparages your alma mater. I mean, your your efforts as a PhD. When my mom says, oh, you're a doctor, but not the kind that helps people, she's talking specifically about you and your kind.
This, there's some terrible advice here. Yeah, okay, it's not terrible advice. It's just sad advice. I mean, like this one, many young men reported feelings of awkwardness trying to carry the conversation. Or my favorite one is that many men who responded expressed concerns that when their female dates were overly self-critical or trying too hard to impress them, the men ended up feeling confused. I just picture these like poor little guys in Provo actually like sitting there staring at their hands, not understanding. Now, I'm so confused. What is happening?
Here's something interesting, though, is I've noticed as I've gotten into my upper 20s, that as I go out on dates, and I'm not sure why this is. Maybe you can analyze this for me, Jeff, and tell me what's going on in people's heads.
I know so much.
But I feel like women as they age, maybe lose some of their confidence. Because sure. Like dates are more and more. I'm so used to being like the turkey on a date, right? Where I'm feeling self-conscious and I'm worried about what they're thinking of me. And as I've gotten older and maybe just more confident, like I noticed that in a majority of women, they're very nervous and very, very anxious and very self-conscious themselves as they get older. In college, it was complete opposite, right? They held all the cards. And out of college, as I've like continued in my career and stuff, I feel like for them, especially if they're right coming out of college, maybe, I don't know if it's the fact that, you know, it's they are light on the career or whatever it is they're doing, but they like very, very obvious nervousness and, you know, like kind of fumbling for words and things like that. Like, and it's not awkward conversation. It's like they're legitimately can't look at me in the eye type of stuff.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I've noticed a lot of that though, and I think it's kind of a trend that's out there. So maybe this is legitimate feedback where guys are like, hey, come on, snap out of it, be yourself, don't be nervous, I'm just a guy.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that, but also some of this advice seems to come down to women. It's like, hey, be talkative, talk, don't make the man carry the conversation for the whole date. I don't think that has anything to do with age. That's just like, no, you're just going out with like a non-talkative, shy, weird person. You know, if you are very gregarious and, you know, make friends wherever you go and like to be with people, you're not going to have the best time with someone who's shy and can't keep up a conversation and engage. Mm-hmm. You're just not. And I don't think this is a general advice as if telling all women, hey, ladies, all of us are carrying the conversations. I think it's more just find your right type, because I'm a pretty talkative, friendly type, and I've been out with women who just, they're very nice and interesting and everything, but they just don't have like that snappy back and forth, you know, you might need. Yep. And I think that's more of a personality thing. I don't think any amount of study or advice to the women of the church is actually going to cover that, because no matter what, I think that's just personality. We're just imbued one way or the other.
That's true.
All right.
A couple of quick mentions.
Very quick, because we have something far more important. I don't care about the other ones.
LDS church in Pocatello was vandalized by a janitor. The report reads like this. At 6:30 a.m., a church member was checking on the building. The member drove by and saw lights on inside, police say. After entering the building, he found a 22-year-old man who, he said, threw things around and made a mess in nearly every room of the building. Police contacted the suspect, who identified himself as a maintenance person who was cleaning the building.
There we go.
He was not associated with the church, but one of the suspect's family members transported him to the hospital for a mental evaluation.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Thanks, Pocatello.
Also,
News.
Some guy started an anti-Mormon website, but he's a GOP candidate who started a website about top 10 craziest Mormon beliefs.
Savvy ad work right there.
Yeah, very exciting. I love his banner alone. Anyways, there's that. But more importantly, Al and I, this is not even news, but Al and I were discussing, how'd this start? Well, I think it was because we wondered why no one in the 12 was on Twitter or anything along those lines. And I mentioned, I said, I think Quentin L. Cook has a blog, doesn't he?
He wrote a blog post.
He wrote a blog post. And so then we decided to think about what would the actual blog names be for the Brethren and the Twelve. What titles should they have?
You're welcome to start these.
Okay, so we start.
We'll just take turns.
We start with Quentin's Quandaries.
What a great blog that would be. I would totally read that. And then A Holland That Cares, as opposed to like the country Holland that does not care.
Oh, and of course Packers Press.
Perry for Pope.
Yeah, I don't agree with that one. I don't know why I came up with that one. One of my favorites. Above the Clouds, a personal blog by Robert D. Hales.
Then Russell M. Nelson, of course, he would need a blog, and it would be titled Russ's Fusses. .blogspot.com or something like that.
And then Dallin H. Oak's blog, Judgment Day.
Yeah, it's simply titled like
just Judgment
Day. I'm picturing the blank WordPress theme with that.
See, I almost pictured it more. I wanted to call it just Dallin. I could see it being some sort of a quirky, you know, CBS sitcom, Dallin, but Judgment Day works for me.
It's like The New Girl.
Yeah, exactly. Dallin.
Let's see. For M. Russell Ballard, he would of course have a blog that would be Delve In with Melvin, as that's the M in M. Russell Ballard. Yeah.
Delve In with Melvin or Going Nuclear with Richard G. Scott.
Tender Mercies with David A. Bednar.
We tried our best to think of a quirkier, less obvious Bednar one, but all I could think of was like pickling together. I don't, you know what?
Who's can say?
And then Who Am I? D. Todd Christofferson.
It's autobiographical. See, and then Neil Squeals.
For Neil,
which I picture him in like a Leave It to Beaver guy that walks out and is like, it's Neil Squeals. That's all we have.
And that's all we have. We're not going to even go for
we
the first
We amuse ourselves. You don't have to enjoy this show. We enjoy it
but
for
please
you.
Submit to us your own thoughts for blog titles for both the 12 and also for the First Presidency, because we didn't tackle any of them. So
now those are free games still.
So please let us know your thoughts on that matter. And of course, in reviewing the week, I don't know, because now we're using this new Trello thing and I don't know what we just talked about for the whole episode.
Oh, I deleted everything.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
P. Diddy talked a little bit. David Archuleta is going on a mission. Sherry Dew is evil. Deseret Book is frustrating. What's with rebranding YSA awards? Jimmer was the best thing in the world ever. And a lot of eating crow happened this week.
Quentin's Quandaries, as well as a crazy janitor that messed things up and threw stuff around.
So, Al, why don't you tell people where they can find us?
You can find us in contact at thisweekinmormons.com is our email, and thisweekinmormons.com obviously the blog podcast,
the website,
and then facebook.com/thisweekinmormons, twitter.com/therealtwim.
Please go and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
We love you there.
Everybody, we hope. Oh, and of course, do keep the lookout for the resurrected Sunday School Bonanza. We look forward to doing the Book of Mormon this year. Should be good. Should be up on iTunes and streaming on YouTube is what we're looking at. So
it will be magic.
Everyone, hope you had a great 2011. Have a safe and happy new year. And next time we talk to you, it will be 2012. So
absolutely. Good. All right, man.
Thank you, Al. May God be with you always.
See you, Jeff.
Goodbye, buddy. Thanks for listening to This Week in Mormons, everyone. And we look forward to talking to you soon. Never care for me, Roseanne.